Daphne Brown, End of Reel 3. Daphne Brown, Reel 4.
And so, then the next woman said, "Oh, you were an actress." So I said, "Yes, I was an actress." "Oh," she said. "Well, of course, there's no team spirit in the theatre, is there? And this is a job that's full of team spirit." And then, of course, I blew my top. I thought, I don't care whether I get the job or not. They're stupid women. And, of course, I was snuffly, and and it all came out. And then this man, who was puffing this pipe like mad, he suddenly said, "Hear, hear." And so I went out, and this little twitty lady said to me, "Oh, how did you get on, Miss Peretz?" And I said, "It's no good. They didn't like me, and I shan't get..." "Oh, no, I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure you'll be all right." Anyway, I think the general swung it, and I did get the job. And I went to a mental hospital in Netley to begin with. And I loved it, I adored it. And then, of course, they wanted to send me to Malaya. And, of course, I won't fly. And so they had me up to headquarters to grill me. And I said, "Well, I'm not going to fly. So would you mind if I try and get a seat on a ship?" And so it's extraordinary. I went back, this was Southampton, I went back, and I phoned up Southampton, P&O, "Could you get me a seat on a ship going to Malaya?" And the answer came back, "Yes, we've got one left." So, of course, what a journey. It was wonderful, just wonderful. I had the time of my life. Such lovely people. It was not first class, of course. It was sort of tourist. And there was a man going back to engineer some railway in Hong Kong, and white. And then there was a sort of coloured boy going back to Colombia, and Chinese going here, and we were just a lovely, lovely bunch of people. It was so good. And then there was somebody from the Malayan government. He was, I suppose you say, like a member of parliament. And he was coloured, whatever. What you say when they're double, you know, sort of neither one thing nor the other. And so I became very friendly with this man. So that was lovely, lovely. Yes.
But what date would this have been? What time of year would it have
that
been?
The terrorist period was going on. It was
so the 1950s.
50s, sort of, yes, sort of middle to late 50s, of course, yes. And then, of course, I started off in Singapore, and then... I went up to the Cameron Highlands for a year, which was absolutely wonderful working with the Gurkhas up there, and because poor souls, they'd been so used to living in their own country, which was high, I suppose, coming into the lowlands of Malaya, they all got TB. So they needed nursing, and of course I'm no nurse, I'm a welfare officer, I look after their welfare. And
that was your job, was it?
That was my job. I was a welfare officer. And that was lovely. And then I was sent to Taiping. And, actually, it was in the Camerons that I used to get sent into the jungle with a Malay driver. And what do they call them? Do they call them 10-ton trucks or whatever you say those big lorries are? And just this Malayan driver and me. And we used to go and to the Gurkhas, who were fighting somewhere or other. And, I didn't realise that I was going in and out of terrorist country. I thought it was wonderful. And taking the Gurkhas' books and handcrafts and finding out if there were any problems and that sort of thing. And then the next thing is I find I'm given a medal. And, of course, that makes me laugh, because I think, well, what do I want a medal for, you see? I haven't done anything, but... But it was a good... It was. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm. I loved every moment of it.
Yes. Were there many welfare people there? Because this was a dangerous period, wasn't it, during the emergency?
Yes. No. My group was under Lady Mountbatten. And each... I mean, there were more military hospitals in those days than there are now, but you would get, I suppose, only two Red Cross welfare officers, you know, and they would live with the QA sisters, in their messes, and of course it was marvellous because you didn't have a boss really, because you didn't come under the matron, although you wore your uniform and that sort of thing. You didn't come under the matron, and you really didn't come under the CO. So you were a law unto yourself, and some of the QAs didn't like that very much. And any of the matrons who were falling out with the COs or something was going wrong would get hold of you and ask you to mediate, you see. So it was a fun job. A real fun job. I loved it.
And you were in uniform for this? Red Cross, would you?
Yeah, but Red Cross uniform. And I had pips. Yes, I had pips too. But it was very funny because eventually, I think the War Office thought this was ridiculous. We shouldn't have pips. And so they were going to take our pips away. And Lady Mountbatten, who was, although she was my boss, she was St. John's Ambulance, and she used to say, "You're not taking the pips from my girls. My girls are going to keep their pips." So there we were. The Red Cross had no pips, and the St. John's Ambulance had pips. And, of course, the men used to cheek us, you see, because when the men saw pip, they knew they had to be good. But if they saw no pip, they thought I was, you know, you were ready for whatever. So that was that. And I liked Lady Mountbatten. I was up in the Camerons, up in the mountains, and she was down in KL, and she wanted to see me. And she sent a helicopter up for me. I mean, after all, I was nobody, you know. And you know, it took a little time to get down, and she was at the door waiting for me, you know. So, I had a lot of time for her. I thought she was wonderful. And then 2 or 3 days later, she was dead, because she'd left Malaya and went wherever, you know, just somewhere or other in the Far East, and she died there. Yeah, so I had no idea she was ill.
Did she do good work there?
Oh, she was wonderful. Everybody loved her. She, in the kitchen, she'd want to go into the kitchens and see the staff and talk to the staff and that sort of thing, you know? There was no side to her whatsoever. No, I was full of admiration. Lovely woman.
That was quite a change for you, wasn't it?
Wonderful, wasn't it?
To go from, you know, the stage to being a welfare officer. Did they give training?
We had 2 weeks. I think it was about 2 weeks. Maybe it might have been a little bit more. In Grosvenor Crescent, where we were taught all the handcrafts and that sort of thing, you see. And we worked in close proximity with, I remember SAFA was one of the, I can't remember what SAFA stands for, but we worked in close proximity with SAFA. And then we were in close proximity with the church, of course, you see, being welfare. And yes, it was good. It was good. So what did I do? Oh, and then, of course, I come to the, you know, and then I'll go quickly over this. I then sort of got amoebic dysentery, which is the worst form of dysentery you can get. And, of course, the matron was horrified because she came in to me when I was so ill and she said, "How did you get amoebic dysentery? None of my girls are allowed to get amoebic dysentery." So I'd just come back from Hong Kong, so I suppose that's where I'd got it. Anyway, I got over that. So why am I telling you this? So, oh yes, so I met a rubber planter, and when I got back to England, and it was the weather, it was a dreadful winter, and I was so cold, and I, having left the sun, and I was sitting there miserable, and this cable came, "Will you marry me?" So, of course, I thought, oh, this is a way out. So, yes, so I married him, and I knew from the beginning it was a mistake. And it was a terrible mistake. And after, I had a wonderful honeymoon out of it, mind you. I went all round Europe. I went to the, whatever, Monte Carlo rally or whatever it is, and Switzerland and Italy and just every place you can think of. We took this little Volkswagen with us, which was wonderful, but in a way I was miserable. And at the end of 6 months, I left him, so that was that. Then I went to a secretarial college and took up shorthand typing, and which I adored. I loved change, you see, and all these little young girls were so good to me. I was like a granny to them, you see. And then suddenly, the head of the college came one day after a year and said, "There's an advertisement here. A West End director needs a secretary, preferably liking the theatre, and I think you should go after this job." So I went after the job, and of course it was Basil Brown, you see. So I worked with him as his secretary for 5 years and then married him.
Now, am I right in thinking he had something to do with the war and entertainment?
Absolutely, far more important than ever I am. He's a big man. He founded Stars in Battle Dress. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Did you know of that in the war, Stars in Battle Dress?
Did I?
Had you heard of it?
No. No, I hadn't. Was it in... No, I hadn't. No, I have you. Had you heard of it? No, I hadn't. But it obviously was quite important, you know. Yes.
What sort of stars worked in Stars in Battle Dress? Did you have any idea?
Yes. Yes, but what a pity you didn't... of course, you can't stop this, can you? Because there's over there, I don't quite know where it is, but there's a long list of people who worked for Stars in... Everybody worked for Stars in Battle Dress. And the biggest one of all who adored Basil was Charlie Chester. Just everybody. Yes, I can't... It's no good, I can't... I've got the list there, but I can't... it's quite a list. Mm-hmm.
And these would have been serious actors?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people who became stars afterwards, yes. Big stars.
So he would have been heavily involved in this during the war?
He was a soldier. He was the West Yorkshire Regiment. And just before the war, he was very interested in amateur theatricals. And he saved the York Theatre from becoming into a bingo hall. So, of course, the reason that it's a repertory theatre now is due to Basil. And he was mentioned twice in dispatches. He was one of the last people off the Dunkirk beaches. And he woke up in Basingstoke Hospital, and there was a general who came and said, stood at the bottom of his bed and said, "Are you the person who made themselves so well known in the north with theatre?" And he said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, you won't be able to go back to your regiment. You better come to the War Office and work for me." And so that's where he started this idea of Stars in Battle Dress. And he had a great battle. You know, they didn't want him to do it. But he went on and on and on and on. And so that... Oh, yes, he was a great man, Basil. You talk about Donald being humble. My goodness, Basil was humble too. He was a very humble man, a great man, and a humble man. And then, of course, General Montgomery sent him to Billy Butlin to when with the Second Front started. Montgomery wanted his troops to be looked after, and so he thought Billy Butlin would be good for the job, and he sent Basil to ask Billy Butlin if he would do it, and Billy Butlin said yes, and so he was one of the first ones into Germany, and Basil became his minder. And they got on so terribly well together. They were so different in personality and everything that they became such great friends. And Billy Butlin said, "Will you become my director of entertainment after the war?" So, of course, he did. And then he became joint managing director when Butlin retired. So that was that. And then he was 15 years older than me. But you'd know his brain was so alive, so active. He was such a funny man. He made me laugh all the time. You know, wonderful man. And so his brain was just so alive. And but there you are. I miss him a lot.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Mrs. Daphne Brown, for telling me about your wartime and post-war experiences. Very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.